Warning: the following podcast, which contains strong language and mature content, is unsuitable for children or for the faint of heart. The subject matter discussed will be frightening and graphic in nature. Listener discretion is advised.
When you want to hear about the paranormal, you get the Spooked Girls. True crime that makes you hypothermal with the three Spooked Girls. Stabby snippets will give you dreams. Tara and Jessica will make you ask great, along with the Spooked Girls. Bring on the slaughter. We on that haunted ground. The three Spooked Girls.
Hey there, Spooksters, and welcome to another episode here on Three Spooked Girls. My name is Jessica, and as always, I am joined by my favorite gal pal, Tara.
Hey, Spooksters.
Today we are doing part two, or episode two, of The Way Down, God, Greed, and The Cult of Gwen Shamblin. And if you have not listened to part one, you should, because, well, I rambled a lot in that one, and it's gonna
it'll be all right.
It's fine. You guys will like it. But this is part two, and we're going to just jump right in. We left off the last episode. We've been introduced to a wonderful woman. Her name is Natasha. She is the ex-girlfriend of Joe Lara, who marries Gwen in this over-the-top. She fucking looked like a fairy princess, which I was like, okay, her dress is beautiful. Her hair was crazy.
Her hair was just as poofy as her skirt.
It was just as poofy. It looked very similar. They both had sparkles in it.
Same shape.
Mm-hmm. Same shape. Literally same shape. Oh my God, could you imagine if they just like put a Barbie in her hair? It would have just been like...
She would have had a mini her on top of her head.
Right. And it was just, yeah.
And then they could do like a little Lego one or a Polly Pocket one, and then it'd be another one.
I love this so much. Someone on the internet right now is like, I've got you. And I was like, adding this
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. This time of year can be a lot, and it's natural to feel some sadness or anxiety about it. But adding something new and positive into your life can counteract some of those feelings. Therapy can be a bright spot amid all of the stress and change. Something to look forward to make you feel grounded, to give you the tools to manage everything going on. I myself suffer from seasonal depression. The winters are rough on me, but therapy has been such a positive tool for me to have to cope with those things that I struggle with during the season. And if you are also someone who's experiencing things like that, or just trying to make the best version of yourself, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is amazing when the holidays are extremely hectic. Find your bright spot this season with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/spookedgirls today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/spookedgirls.
So the episode starts to talk about Natasha and who she is and how she's connected to all this. Because she dated Joe for many years. They like broke up, got back together, broke up, got back together. They met when she was 16 and he was 21. Red flag number one.
Mm-hmm.
And they met in acting class. Natasha says that because she was like in love with Joe and just thought he was so handsome, that she ignored a lot of the red flags. Like the fact that Joe just never seemed to want to have a job.
Joe is a freeloader for sure. He's what is the, oh my God, what is that meme?
He's a gold digger.
No, there's a meme. It's like a homosexual or something. Like, I can't remember what it is. It's something like to make,
I don't know,
it's just a joke. It's like to make fun of like dudes fall in love so fast because they need a place to live, or a narcissist falls in love so fast because they need a place.
Like, I'm homosexual and so therefore I'll love you for your home. I get it.
That's Joe.
This is Joe. Joe was raised in California. His stepdad was like a very wealthy CEO. So he had like all the rich boy life. He was into like the surfing, the bikes, had a pilot's license. That's not a normal thing that people just have as a teenager. And he would jump from woman to woman. In fact, we meet this guy that was in their acting classes. Loved him. Wish I'd written his name down, but I loved him. He said that Joe was dating this woman in their class and she was like, he was in his 20s and she was in her 50s.
Sugar baby.
He like moved in with her. She bought him a motorcycle, like a Harley. Just was like, I got you, boo-boo. And he did something and he fucked up that relationship and she kicked him out and she lit that shit on fire. And I was like, lady, you should have sold that bike.
I mean, if she's in a place to be a sugar mama, then it probably don't matter.
True. Like, I would love to be that rich where I could be like, you know what? Fuck you.
I bet he cheated on her or something.
I have a feeling it was, or like stole from her or some shit. Like, he was using her because he didn't, like, you'd think now he's homeless. He doesn't have a job. He's got to start working. Nah, bro went out and found him a new woman and moved in with her. He was a grifter and he would like evade taxes. And then I kind of took offense to this because they were like, he had a drug problem. He smoked weed. And I was like,
calm down.
Everyone just fucking calm down. You don't have a drug problem if you smoke weed. I mean, maybe if it was like to the point where you're like, I will not survive without this.
Yeah.
And you're like, you might be like, okay, maybe we should smoke a little less.
Right.
But like, I think he probably was just, you know, smoking.
He's just a sugar baby stoner. That's what it is.
I'm trying to come up with a combination of that name and it's going to come to me later. So Natasha and Joe dated like off and on for like over a decade. Then she was like, I broke up with him in like September of 2007. And then I didn't talk to him for like a year. And then he called me in December of 2008, which is really funny because I saw a TikTok yesterday and it was about a woman. It was a girl and they threw her a party to celebrate her 1 year. And it was her 1 year of not texting a dude.
That's funny.
I was like, we need more of that in the world.
Love supportive people.
Right. So then Natasha and Joe, like Natasha was getting older and she felt like her biological clock was ticking. And so she was like, okay, I want to have a baby. And so in November of 2010, her daughter, so her birthday is coming up. She's going to be 13 soon. Her daughter was born. And this is where it gets really fucking interesting. So they're like, okay, we're going to move to Nashville. And I was like, okay, 2010, moving to Nashville is probably smart because it's probably cheaper than LA, right? Like he's not working. I don't know what the fuck she's doing at this point. He wanted to be a country western musician. And here's the thing. He has a mall singer voice, meaning like if you heard him in a Macy's singing like at the piano or at a Nordstrom, you'd be like, that's fine. He's okay. But would I rush out to buy his album?
No.
No, thank you. Basically, Natasha makes a deal with him. She goes, we have a new baby. We're moving to Nashville. You have until our daughter starts kindergarten. So that's like five.
That's fair.
That is fair. You have till like she's five to get this career off the ground. That's 5 years. Get out there, pound the pavement, get your career going. Or we're going to move to Chicago where I have family. Like she literally was like, I have a house there. And I was like, wait, you have a house there? Fucking move to Chicago. Don't fucking, dude can fly to Nashville.
Right. And like, she said she had a bunch of family, like 30
relatives within like a 4 mile radius.
Yeah. So like a good support system, you know, family for her and them and the kids, you know, or not kids, and their daughter.
Right. Which they may have ended up like if they had stayed together, they may have had more kids.
Yeah. You never know. That's not what happened.
5 years comes later. 2015 is happening.
He is not Garth Brooks.
He's not Garth Brooks. And one day we might do the Garth Brooks is a serial killer story, but not today. So they're getting ready to move to Chicago and they break up and Joe is like, fuck, she's going to take my kid. So he pulls the shittiest shit I have ever seen. This is the character of this man. He basically lies and calls the police and says that Natasha, who loves her daughter, who would do anything for her daughter, was sexually abusing her daughter so that he could get full custody and fuck over Natasha.
How fucking vile. So
right?
Vile.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh.
Yeah. Basically, the police, you know, they arrest her in front of her daughter. Her daughter's crying. She's crying. She's like, what the fuck? Why am I being accused of this? They interview her and they're very confused. And then they have doctors interview the child and like do examinations. Little girl's like, nobody's ever touched me.
Yeah.
So it's like, thank God it's dismissed and found out that he was lying, but like, fuck that.
Mm-hmm.
So now they're like having to go to custody and they go to court and they get 50-50 custody. And then Joe is like, he started being a handyman and he was like, got into this like networking group. I couldn't think he would be a good handyman. I have a feeling he was like a real shit handyman.
He was just trying to fix stuff at houses for the rich ladies so he could find the next boo.
That's what I thought too.
Mm-hmm.
He basically started doing these like networking events because they lived in Nashville and Brentwood was really close. And he started going this and he found Remnant Fellowship Church, which then introduced him to one Miss Gwen Shamblin,
mm-hmm.
who, mind you, up until this point was like, you can't get a divorce.
Yeah.
Mm-mm. And she met Joe and he looked at her and it was not heart emoji eyes. It was cha-ching emoji eyes. And she looked at him and went, wow, he looks so handsome. Because he was like that quintessential 90s hot guy.
Mm-hmm.
Like blue eyes, like light brown hair. They were like, he had blonde hair. I was like, no, that was light brown. Like, let's get that straight. And he was apparently on a TV show, like a TV movie of the week of like George of the Jungle or Tarzan. I was like,
oh yeah, he was Tarzan.
And then for a minute, I was like, wait a second. Was he Tarzan at Disneyland? Because I don't know if you guys remember this, but if you lived anywhere near or went to Disneyland in the early 2000s, there was a Tarzan and the dude was fucking hot.
Mm-hmm.
He was like, stop and be like, I'm gonna just melt all over you. I remember I was like 15 at Disneyland with one of my best friends at the time. And I was just like, we're gonna stand in line and get a picture with Tarzan. And she was like, no. And then Tarzan walked by and she goes, we're gonna stand in line and get a picture with Tarzan. And I was like, yeah, it was bad.
Oh.
She saw him and they were attracted. Here are some things that he liked about her. She was very rich.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know that the church had its own recording studio? So they would help.
Perfect.
With his music career.
Wow, look at that. Money and resources.
Mind you, Gwen had been married for 40 years. I'm not even 40. She has two adult children. Who have children.
She's like a grandma.
She was a grandma. She divorced her husband and poor Dave just got kicked to the curb. Just bye bye. I'm very afraid to say how much I love Bob in this episode. Bob is the rancher dude because, you know, every time I come on this fucking show and I'm like, I love this person, something comes out and they're a bad person.
Yeah, it happened again with somebody else. I'll tell you later.
Damn it, Bob, don't fuck me over, man. I'm so in your corner. I am in your... old ass man. Like, I'm like 2 seconds being like, Bob, you divorced Sherry. I'll come be with you. I'll take care of you, Bob. Because when he old as fuck, and then I would just be like, stay away. But I'll feed your horses. He has a horse. He has a very pretty horse. Bob is married to a woman named like Sherry or Cheryl or some cunt. I don't know. She's terrible. And she was like all about Gwen. Bob is like, well, when Gwen and Dave got a divorce, my boys called me and I love this. Dad, you better get your boots on. Gwen got a divorce. That means mom's gonna get a divorce. And sure as fuck, she was like, I'm done with your ass. And left him because apparently divorcing was the thing you could do now in that church. Bob starts talking about it and he's like talking about Joe. And he was like, once Joe came in the picture, like everything changed. Cause literally Bob is from Oklahoma. He was like born and raised there. He's like indigenous. Like he's like half indigenous, half white. He's just a spiritual person. His wife got into the way down thing and then fell in love with it. And then was like, please, can we move to Nashville? I'll never ask for anything again. And so then they moved to Brentwood, bought a little thing and lived there. And then she became like Gwen's number two. And she divorced Bob, who this is the man she's divorcing. Like he has titanium knees or hips. I can't remember which one. His wrist is welded shut. He's got a bum wrist. He has throat cancer and he's diabetic.
I know. I'm like, oh my God, this poor guy.
And you know, the reason she was divorcing him is because Joe wanted that property. It was so sad. He was like, I texted her that I like loved her and that I'll always love her and that I'll give her the divorce if that's what she wants. And then he offers her money and then she counters for $50,000 more. And he's like, I can't work. Like he needs somebody, like someone should be taking care of Bob. Like literally, like he needs like a home nurse. He was 68 in 2020. He like 71
in his 70s. Yeah,
like Bob needs help. If you live near Bob, help Bob. As long as Bob is good, Bob, don't be bad. Please don't be bad. But Joe was like, I would really love to have a place like this, his ranch. And I think that basically they were going to keep upping the divorce settlement until he was forced to like give her it. And he was like, I'll sell my ranch, but I'm not going to give it to them. So Gwen's ex-husband, David, basically just like, he has a master's in divinity, which is like really kind of a big deal. Like, the process of becoming a minister in a lot of religions is that you go to like some sort of Bible school, Bible college, and then you go to something called divinity school, which is basically like a master's program for church. And he had that, but yet his wife is the one in charge of the church. It's very interesting. After the church started, even though he was one of the 8 original founding members, he kind of just backed away because he was really disgusted with like the whole religion for money thing.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus for pay.
Yes, we touched on that. I think the last one, they like just like shoo-shooed.
Yeah.
Or maybe earlier this one. I can't remember. We're doing back to back.
It's this one. They shooed him away. And because basically what they were doing is like David was a bigger guy. Like he looked like he was just like a portly man. And, you know, he was with Gwen and they seemed happy. And then she met Joe and was like, I couldn't be happier unless I was with Joe. So she kicked him to the curb. There's something else you should know about the Remnant Fellowship Church is that basically the leaders are made up of this like these core people. But Gwen has 2 children that are very much the number 2 in charge of this church. And that's her daughter, Elizabeth, and her son, Michael. Oh my God. Elizabeth's name is Elizabeth Hannah. Hannah is her last name. For the longest time, I fucking thought her name, she was like one of those, like how my niece's name is like Shelby Ann, you know? Like I thought her name was Elizabeth Hannah. And then I was like, oh wait, no, it's her last name. People are just weird and say it. But her name is actually Michelle. It's very, very weird. But they're like very involved in the church. And it is said that the structure is when Gwen stepped down, or in her case, fell from the sky, Elizabeth took over the church. And they are just like little, she's a little mini Gwen, except for her hair is not as big. It's very plastered to her head. Again, if disordered eating is a trigger for you, like do not watch this because you will look at her and you will be like, someone needs to help her. She's so thin. I was telling Tara, it basically looks like someone has stretched her skin over her skeleton. She's so thin. It's very alarming. And Elizabeth, you know, she's just like one of the leaders. And it's so sad because like the way that they handle things in the church is like they don't talk about it. Basically, Gwen preaches that if anything bad happens to you, it's your fault because God is punishing you. So Elizabeth loses a child. He's 5 months old and he dies of SIDS. And, you know, rushed to the hospital, doesn't make it. They like had started a prayer chain. God, flashbacks of that, of getting phone calls in the middle of the night. Please pray for so-and-so. Like they were tweeting this, they were texting it. And then he dies and they go to church and it's basically like this giant mourning session. And then one day they're just like, we're done talking about it. But people are like, oh my God, if God's punishing them, did they do it? No, it must, like, people started questioning themselves. Like, God's punishing the church. Did I do something to bring this? Like, that's how fucking brainwashed these people are. Is that obviously it couldn't be Gwen and her family, so it must be me. Could you fucking imagine, like, if someone you knew lost a child and you didn't have any interaction with this child's death? Be like, did I do something that pissed off God to kill this child?
Oh my gosh. And if someone fully believes that, like, can you imagine that? They live with guilt that, like, they should not have, you know? They shouldn't right. have to suffer through. It's wild, for sure.
There's the woman who she's interviewed throughout this. She was one of like the higher ups in the church. Her husband cheated on her a lot. And Gwen kind of just told her she had to stay with him, which is so fucked up. We'll talk about it in a later episode. But she got a call and they were bringing people in to do family interviews to figure out who was fucking sinning that resulted in the death of this pastor's grandson. So it's not even just like could have been in people's minds. They were being like someone done fucked up, who done fucked up. And they were going to find that person and then kick them out. It was said that after that, Elizabeth, who had been like, you know, outgoing, she was a little bit more like, she's quieter.
Sure.
She's more reserved, which makes sense. But she never seemed to be grieving again. Like once the church was like, we're done grieving, Elizabeth was just done grieving, which that can't be good for your mental health.
No.
Like I can't even fathom one day having a 5-month-old baby and the next day not having a 5-month-old baby. Like for me, it was hard when my parents died, being like one day I had parents and the next day don't.
Yeah.
But like I kind of expected them to die because they were older.
Yeah.
Like, that's got to be crazy.
Yeah.
But then to be like, you're not allowed to mourn this anymore. Move the fuck on.
Awful.
And then Then we're introduced to her son, Michael.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They were like, Michael is he's the artist. He's the music man. Michael did not have that great a voice. I thought Joe sounded better than Michael. Except for the one time that Michael sang and he sounded like one of the Beatles. And I was like, okay, I could fucks with this. But apparently Michael was in a loveless marriage and he was really unhappy. And he would have affairs with people. In the church at the I love this. They were like the waitress at the restaurant they go to. I'm like, how bold of you, Michael.
He literally gives no fucks, apparently.
Really? Apparently. At one point in time, it said that he like left the church and then came back. It was also said he suffered from depression and being depressed wasn't allowed in that church. So they just didn't acknowledge it. And when he was depressed, his weight would fluctuate. So not only would his weight fluctuate, but then Gwen couldn't have him on stage with her because he
had gained weight,
was thinning and not, which probably like, think about the fact that like people knew he was doing this shit, like having affairs. He was drinking a lot, which is against the church, which is weird because they'd have like parties and they'd totally be drinking and getting sloshed. And I was like, that's really fucking weird. I've never seen that at a church.
But yeah.
Okay. They all drinking margaritas, like lots of them. And then he's gaining weight. So Gwen's probably like, look, guys, sin equals weight. Ugh. Like, it was like the perfect example for her. But there was this woman in the church and her name is not Sarah, but they like gave her a name because she's in the shadows.
Oh, yeah. Her identity is concealed. Mm-hmm.
And Sarah is an ex-member and she actually joined the church before she knew about the Way Down workshop. She had an eating disorder. She had suffered from disordered eating her whole life. And she was like, if I don't get the fuck out of this church, it's going to kill me. Because she was thin, like she was fit. And yet they still were like, you have to lose weight. You have to lose weight for God. Because if you were in the church, you had to go to these workshops. Like, it didn't matter if you were in shape. Like, you still had to go to these workshops. So she was like, fuck, if I don't get out of here, I'm going to die. And she took advantage of the situation with Michael. Basically, one night they were at a wedding. Michael gave her a very, like, I like you look, like a seductive look. And she started having a relationship with him. They would drink, they'd have sex, blah, blah, blah. She was documenting it all. I don't think she was like actually documenting the sex. I think she was probably documenting like him coming over and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you try to leave the church, Gwen, like if you're a woman and you're like, I gotta get the fuck out of here. This isn't good for me. It was the women who wanted to leave. If you're a man, why the fuck would you want to leave? This is a whole church that basically tells you that you're right. No matter what, you can do whatever the fuck you want with impunity. There's no repercussions for you and your wife has to stay with you. You can go out, like that one lady's husband could go out and cheat on her as much as he wants because she's not allowed to leave him. And if she tries to leave him, like she was a piano teacher and probably like 95% of her booming business came from people in the church.
Oh yeah.
So if she left, she would have no income. She probably had like four people who weren't from the church, probably like local people.
I mean, honestly, knowing this cult, like I wouldn't have been surprised if all of her students were all part of the church.
I think she was just probably saying it so that she didn't seem like she was part of like the indoctrination all the way in. Be like, I had some outside of.
Yeah. But you know what I mean? Because of like how crazy they were about like not being around people who weren't in it.
Right. So basically Gwen preached that like whatever your gift was, you should give it to the church. And then like she wanted, this is how you know it's a cult. She wanted it to be self-sufficient. They had this company called like the Exodus Foundation or some shit like that. And it was a for-profit. It wasn't a non-for-profit.
Mm-mm.
I think it might have been they tried to make it a non-for-profit. I'm not sure. But it was run in her son-in-law. So Elizabeth's husband, his name is like Brendan or Brandon, Hannah. And basically people would have like office. So if like you were a dentist, she wanted people like you're a dentist and you go to our church, you should have an office here. You're a hairstylist. It should just be super insular. You shouldn't need anything. We should be self-sufficient because it keeps you in. If you're a piano teacher and all of your clients, all of your money is coming from within this congregation, of course you're gonna stay. And then if you try to leave, they have their own lawyers. So let's say like I'm married to someone and I got kids and I'm like, peace out. I'm going to take my kids and go. They have lawyers who support the son or the husband, I mean, and they take your kids from you because these women had no money. They had no way of supporting themselves. So this woman, Sarah, was like, had seen this happen. And she was like, I have to fucking get this done or I'm going to die. And so basically she had this affair with Michael. And then when she got strong enough mentally to leave her husband, they came attacking her. Like Gwen was like, we're going to get your kids. She went to Michael and was like, listen, you either tell your mom to back the fuck off or I'm letting everyone know what's happened. And Michael went to his mom and was like, you have to stop. You have to let this one get her, have her kids. Because if so, what's worse? She gets the kids and they get out, or people know that I was fucking around with my wife. And Gwen was like, stop. I'm sure this was like, Michael, stop fucking other women, blah, blah, blah. Like that kind of shit. And then like they backed off. At this point in the episode, Carrie and Glenn come back because they are talking about their daughter, Delaney, who is now an adult and has been with her boyfriend for quite some time, since like 2016. And it's 2020. And they are getting married. Basically, Jackson was like, I'm asking to marry me. I don't really give a shit what you say. And so they're getting engaged and they basically tell her, look, we're not coming if Gwen is doing the ceremony. We're not coming if it's at that church. And Delaney was like, okay, I guess you're not coming. Then it cuts back to Natasha. Natasha is like, oh my God, I'm in this custody battle with Joe now, because now that he's been remarried, they're coming after me for full custody of my daughter. I love the way she talked about her daughter.
Yeah.
Like, it was so beautiful. She was like, my daughter is the nucleus of me. Like, she is my whole reason for living. I'm not just going to fucking hand her over to this cult. Like, she sees it as it is. She wasn't just going to be like, here's my baby.
Yeah, hell no. She fought for her kid.
She did.
So hard. So fucking hard.
She had spent over $250,000 in legal fees. So she was like, fuck this. I'm going to represent myself. So she was working four jobs to pay for all this shit and spending all of her free time that wasn't with her daughter and wasn't working. She was reading up on like how to do this, and she was kicking ass. It was to the point where like when they went, because they were going for full custody, she got 50-50 is basically how it kind of ends. And it's just, it's really interesting because Joe is obviously not happy about it. Gwen is not happy about it. And I'm sure Natasha is not happy that, you know, there's this like 50-50, because that means 50% of the time her daughter is in the clutches and she can't move away. So she was like appealing it, right? And the great, I love Natasha talking about this. She's like, the thing with an appeal is it's public record. So once someone puts up an appeal in, anyone can go look up that appeal and read it. So their lawyer actually contacted her and was like, you don't want to do this. How can we fix this? Blah, blah, blah. You're doing a great job. He's like, I've never seen anyone who's not a lawyer do as good as you did, which I think that was genuine. And he's like, well, what can we do? And she's like, I want Joe to basically say he lied about the sexual allegations. And there's like a moment where the attorney's like, I think we could get him to do that. But Natasha's not going to give up. During that time, people were like following Natasha.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah.
She'd go to a gas station and like someone like pulled in behind her and she was like, mom, there's this car over there, and they didn't get gas. And then like they went to another location and the car was there. And I was like, that actually makes sense.
They were looking for dirt.
Right. And all this is coming back to the fact that like Gwen is going to try to make the most money she can. And one of the ways she does that is she talks about how her church has to look good. Basically, she wanted her people in her church to look like little tiny perfect Christians. They couldn't be overweight, and their children had to be obedient. And the episode leaves on a cliffhanger, and I'm not going to tell you the cliffhanger. You're going to have to come back for the next episode to find out the fuckery that has to do with little Joseph. So we will be back for another episode.
Yes, we will.
On Monday.
Bye.
Bye, guys.